The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
It's January 9th, 2011. I'm Michael C. Rupert, and from a nightclub at the end of the world, this is the Lifeboat Hour. The shooting yesterday of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, Democrat of Arizona, which also resulted in the deaths of six people and the wounding of 14 others, was more than just a wake-up call. My first reaction was that civil unrest in the midst of economic collapse and corruption calling into question the legitimacy and relevance of government had begun. One in seven Americans are now living on food stamps. Unemployment is now near 25%, according to some sources, which track those who have stopped looking altogether. And the continuing travesty of Mortgagegate is eroding everybody's faith in the rule of law in this country. This nation is seeing poverty rates approaching levels unseen in this country for nearly a century. So yesterday I called my old friend and former six-term Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney for a reality check. When she first learned of the shooting, she had the same reaction as mine, which was essentially that the people have finally turned on Congress. Her take, as well as mine, was that the House leadership had exactly the same gut-level reaction. Everybody thought that an uprising had started, and that's what the initial reaction showed. These perceptions were confirmed by the very first news report saying that Representative Giffords had died and that all members of the House should take immediate and increased security precautions, even though the situation is still unfolding. And I've heard reports of possibly two other people having been with or connected to the shooter. One message is clear. Congress has been and still is expecting attacks from an increasingly frustrated, impoverished, and disenfranchised populace against government officials for their abysmal failure to rationally explain and address what is so obviously happening to the American people and the world as a whole. I don't encourage such attacks. I only see them as inevitable. It may well be that suspect Jared Lee Loeffner, don't you love the three names, will prove to be a highly deranged and unstable individual. That certainly is the way he's being spun, and not without evidence. But it would be folly to automatically assume that his actions occurred in a vacuum somehow uninfluenced by the events of collapse that we see all around us. Fear is everywhere. One other thing is clear. This will have a chilling effect on personal interactions between members of the House and their constituents. It's going to change, said McKinney. There will undoubtedly be those who want to go off down blind alleys after red herrings looking for all kinds of things. Anti-Semitism has already been offered on the altar of public consumption because the Congresswoman is Jewish. The Tea Party and Sarah Palin are being routinely injected into media discussions. We may see some new gun laws, but they won't alter the fact that there are already an estimated 250 million firearms and perhaps billions of rounds of ammunition that are already out there in the hands of an increasingly distressed American populace. Conditions are inevitably going to worsen, despite Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's recent proclamation, quote, the recovery is taking hold. Don't you love that? Continued irrationality on the part of the government will produce more irrationality from the people until the time comes when it will not be possible to conveniently categorize would-be assassins and shooters as deranged. Otherwise, the government will be in the position of having to label us all as such, and by then, it's not really going to matter. Jared Lee Loeffner is a young man from a younger generation less inclined to worry about the labels offered by the establishment. His generation, as with young people all over the world, is suffering mightily and will bear the brunt of the wreckage human industrial civilization has left them. He's a member of a generation which, looking into the future, sees nothing except hopelessness. Make no mistake that as the fallout from this tragic event continues, that and that alone will be the paramount concern for political leaders in this country and around the world. You can find a transcript of this editorial at www.collapsenet.com. Cynthia McKinney, who was the presidential nominee of the Green Party in 2008, will be my very special guest 2 weeks from tonight on January 23rd. Yeah, my dear friend Cynthia is coming here to talk to us on a Lifeboat Hour, and we are just going to have some fun. You won't want to miss that, especially with all that's going on. She's considering another run to go back to the House. She may have an announcement for us 2 weeks from tonight. Our guest next week, January 16th, will be a comeback visit by Mr. Bob Waldrop, who runs one of the largest, most active peak oil preparation groups in the world. That is the Running on Empty discussion groups at Yahoo.com with more than 7,000 active members and 75,000 archived messages over, I don't know, maybe 6, 7, 8 years now. But Bob, who was a great guest and has really made a huge contribution to our efforts to make a transition, was raided last week by officials in Oklahoma City for things having to do with growing food and his property. And he's going to come back and tell us that story next week. I need to give everybody an update on a show that ran on the History Channel this last Wednesday, caught me by surprise. It was a 2-hour special that I had spent a considerable amount of time working on over the summer, called Prophets of Doom. It was originally called The Futurists. And it ran Wednesday twice on the History Channel, and it was amazing. It was 2 hours of real, real solid, professionally done. I have nothing but praise for NFG TV. We haven't seen it since, and I'm a little concerned about that, because in the opening segment, the producers reported that I had proved or proved that the CIA was bringing drugs into the country. And I'm wondering if that was challenged, because this was a big budget effort, extremely well done, incredible photography, but an amazing show in which not just me, but actually I think the real star was James Howard Kunstler. Jim was one of the panelists, and so was Nate Hagans of the Oil Drum. And the conclusion of this 2-hour special was that the world needs to start relocalizing right now. The good part about the show is you can buy it. It's up for sale on the History Channel. I've ordered 2 copies, and I'm hoping they come unchanged. They're supposed to start shipping on February 16th. That's Prophets of Doom. Okay, you know, we're doing a couple things different tonight, because we know how to go with the flow. We have a very special guest who is immensely popular, and I know many of his fans are with us tonight. Before I introduce Chris Martinson, I want to digress for just one more second so that our discussion can be as useful as possible. I think we've all watched an episode or two of the hit TV series House. I kind of like the show. I like the character. The plot line is pretty standard, though. A patient presents with a life-threatening illness. Experts and specialists do examination, conduct tests, you know, and no one seems to be able to figure out the whole picture, and in steps Dr. House. In our case, the patient is human industrial civilization. If one considers experts like Nicole Voss, a.k.a. Stoneley of the Automatic Earth, who was a guest recently, have enormous respect for her. She's brilliant and eloquent. Or even Peter Schiff or Robert Prechter of Elliott Wave, Ugo Bardi, or the brilliant and most eloquent Chris Hedges, or Professor Neil Ferguson of Harvard, where my book Crossing the Rubicon is in the business library, or me. There's one thing that all of us seem to agree upon unanimously. Human industrial civilization is dying, and if I'm overstepping, I'm sure Chris will correct me, but it's dying fast. Imminent and drastic challenges lie in front of us, and there is no cure that will restore the patient to health. Therefore, the primary challenge facing all of us now is how to survive and function as a civilization, and I think more importantly, as a species, as the patient loses control and all too quickly ceases to exist. That's why we need to understand. That's what we all need to understand. While there may be a difference as to issues of inflation, hyperinflation, deflation, peak oil, economic corruption, or any mixture of the above, it's vital not to lose sight of that huge forest for the trees. There is a crisis. It is imminent, and its effects will be devastating for those who are unprepared, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Chris Martinson is an economic researcher and futurist specializing in energy and resource depletion. He's the author of the popular website chrismartinson.com. He has a Ph.D. in neurotoxicology from Duke, an MBA from Cornell. That's an Ivy League resume. Well, Duke not, but and is a fellow of the Post-Carbon Institute He was one of the first to accurately forecast the housing market correction. I was in there, and so were a few other very bright lights who saw it coming a long way off, and the credit bubble collapse years in advance. Chris's Crash Course, that's the name of it, Crash Course video series, which has been viewed by millions worldwide, focuses on the interconnected forces in the economy, energy, and the environment, the three E's, as Chris calls them. That are shaping our future. He has a new book coming out in April titled The Crash Course, The Unsustainable Future of Our Economy and Environment. Chris, welcome to the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, listen, you got a lot of fans, and I know there's a lot of people out here tuning in to hear what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm going to lead into a couple of things. You have on your website an eight-step, and I'm going to just go over the steps real quick because it's very important to note how aligned so many of us are. Step one is to get started. That means admit there's a problem. Step two is take care of your water. Step three is storing food. Step four is growing and preserving food. Step five is health and first aid. Step six, heat, power, and communications. Step seven, protecting wealth. Step eight, community. And step nine, your next steps, which is to invest in really tightening your your position and consolidating. I guess if there's anything I would change in that is I'm coming to the point, having traveled all over the country and being in touch with people all over the world, I'm starting to put community way up near the top of the list. But it's clear, Chris, you focus on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Is the situation really that critical?
Well, you know, Michael, I think it's a good place to start. So what my experience has been in this journey so far, and by the way, I can't let it pass without noting that From the Wilderness was one of the first sites that I started really cutting my teeth on and understanding that big changes were coming.
On behalf of myself, but I also just want to mention, thank you, Chris. I'm saying thank you on behalf of Stan Goff, Jamie Hecht, Carolyn Baker, Michael Caine, Jenna Orkin, everybody who made FTW what it was. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, there was an article there by Dale Allen Pfeiffer, which caught my eye early on. You know, the famous one about food and eating oil and all of that, and that was just news to me. So that was really early part of my eye-opening experience. And you know, I think I went through a very typical human reaction that I've now seen replicated hundreds, if not thousands, of times in people who come across my work or your work or any of there's several teachers out there who are, I think, saying the same message, and here's the progression. The first instinct is shock, right? Maybe anger, a little bit of fear, and for people who are in that early stage of just coming into this awareness of the fact that the world might not be exactly as they thought. In fact, it might have some fairly big risks associated with it.
Yes,
I really do think starting at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is the quickest, easiest, cheapest, fastest way to get to alleviating some of that fear, lifting some of that fog of anxiety, so that you can then progress to those things that are a little bit more difficult, that require a little bit more planning, a little bit more depth to it. You know, so I, absolutely, community is right at the top of my personal list. Boy, that's a hard one to start with, because most, what do we even mean by community? I mean, we have to start with the definition of the word, and it means different things to different people. But honestly, for me, and maybe it's because I'm a man and I have this whole provide and protect thing, and I've got a family and all of that, I started for myself with taking care of what I consider to be some of the basics. And, you know, that's food, water, shelter, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I did that, I felt better, and my mind cleared, and I was able to focus and do other things. And so I offer that as potentially maybe offering the same relief to other people out there. But, you know, I was reading my great-great-grandfather's memoirs recently, in fact, after I'd done all this preparation work, and discovered that he came from a fairly wealthy family back in the early 1800s, upstate New York, and his description of what they lived on in their house, in terms of putting up all of the food, in terms of how they would never dream of entering the winter without understanding where everything was. I honestly think that preparing, either it's in my genes, or let's be honest, it was something that we used to do as a matter of routine course. It's something that's only very, very recently been kind of lost from our cultural fabric.
Yes.
And so in many respects, I don't think we're promoting anything that in any historical sense is unusual. It's something that everybody should do. It's about managing risks. It's about controlling what you can. It's about understanding where you have critical points of reliance that you can maybe build some resilience into. And the bottom line for this... Yeah, go ahead.
I have a quote I want to read you. Sure. It's written by your wife, Becca. It says, after a while, Chris changed tactics, and rather than attempting to force me to his position or expressing his fear, he altered the tone of his voice. He cooled down. He came to me one evening, I remember it well, and said, I need to talk to you about something really important. Everything I've been reading and researching is changing my impression of what the future looks like. I'm looking at the future through a new lens, and what I see has huge implications for our family. I need you to learn what I have learned, to look through the same lens, and see if you come to the same conclusions. You know, all of us who have been out here for a long time are aware of the enormous tensions this creates in family, and that's probably the best entree I have ever heard. To get someone to open their mind just a minute or two, because it really comes from the standpoint of caring for the other person. Obviously, that worked for you, right?
Well, it did, and this is a really important point, because one of the things that I run into a lot is people who say, listen, I get all of this, I understand all of this, but I feel very alone. I'm isolated. My wife doesn't understand it, my husband doesn't understand it, my coworkers, my family, something. They feel a little bit alone with it. And this was actually a fairly important learning in my progression, which was that the more urgent I was about trying to communicate what I knew, and I was fairly urgent for a period of time, mm-hmm. The less effective I was at it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, as soon as I worked it through with my wife and then worked it through in a number of other instances, now, you know, I take the position of saying, you know, I have some really important information. You can listen to it or not. You might accept it. You might reject it. All of those decisions are yours. Either way, I completely understand how you can be in that position now. So I'm not trying to change people anymore. And guess what? I feel like I've become much more effective at it.
Yes.
So the advice here is that for anybody who's really trying to communicate with someone they care about, whatever that means or whatever those circumstances are, that one thing you can try is to simply understand and have compassion for that wherever that person is kind of where they need to be at this point in time. So they might be in complete denial. They might be in an angry stage. They might be in a bargaining stage,
right.
Depressed.
Right.
Wherever they happen to be, totally fine.
Okay.
You might be somewhere else. And so as soon as I let that go, needing people to move from wherever they were and accepting where they were, wouldn't you know it, it became a lot easier to have these conversations, and I feel like I was a lot more effective in being able to reach people.
We have a question already. And by the way, if you want to submit a question for Chris Martinson or me, you can call toll-free at 1-888-874-4888, 874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. I'll get your question, read it on the air. I'm trying to figure out where we put the song in. Chris, you know I'm in a band. That's one of the ways that I deal with the stress of this, and we've written some songs dealing with the situation. The band's called New White Trash, and we play one song per show. And this one, given the urgency that everybody sees about economic issues, and we're going to come back and talk about those hard detail after the break, because I've got some very specific things to talk about with Chris. But this is a song called Free Fall, and it's basically about where everybody in this country is finding themselves right now. Free Fall.
Trash. Trade the little cash.
Trade the middle for the new white trash. Leave your keys, you ain't coming back.
Hold on.
Hold on to nothing at all. But a new white trash is free for.
Go ahead and give me some hope. Go ahead and give me some dope.
That was Free Fall from New White Trash, one of the songs I co-wrote and sang on for, with this incredible group of psychos. Our album, Double Wide, has its official release day after tomorrow. That's a music thing, official release. It's been out. It's actually selling. But day after tomorrow on 1-11-11, our official release comes out, and we're going to get our first official music review at coolalbumoftheday.com. That's a day after tomorrow. You can download the album for $11.11. That's 37 original songs. It's a double CD. You can buy the CD for $22.22. I'm keeping in line with the alliteration of numbers here. And for $55.55, you can become a sponsor for our next project and get a really cool handcrafted CD that we'll put our paw prints on, and it's really cool, and you'll be part of our next project. So anyway, that pretty much sums up where everybody is in the country right now. We got about 6 minutes now before break, and I want to ask. I have a question that was submitted, Chris. I want to get to you. It's from Christine Massey, who sent in, and she said, first, I would like to say that I have a huge amount of respect and appreciation for the work that both you and Chris do. A great big thanks in capital letters to both of you. Well, you're quite welcome. I think it makes us both feel better. My question for Chris, Christine asks, is how do you talk to your children regarding collapse? How much detail do you go into, and how often do you bring it up? Thanks.
Oh, well, you know, this is a difficult question to answer, except in the specifics, so I can tell you what we've done. Our kids have really grown up around the idea that there are big changes coming, and my wife and I, we don't hold back in our conversations. Most kids learn by osmosis anyway, so we've never actually had a sit-down talk and talk to them. What we've done is my wife and I have had fully engaged conversations in earshot. The kids can listen or not, but guess what? Their ears are way more sensitive than anybody suspects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more than you would suspect after you ask them to do a chore or something like that. Their hearing's actually quite good. And it all sort of filters in over time. And here's the wonderful thing. Wherever kids are growing up is just kind of how the world is. The people who have the hardest time adjusting to, thinking about, adapting to the idea of big changes that are coming economically, however we frame that, those people tend to have a real vested interest in the future, that mm-hmm. if the status quo isn't preserved, that's where their downfall lies. For kids who have not yet have any investment in the status quo, I've found that they're very flexible. I've taught the crash course to a group of homeschooling students, 13 to 17 years of age, and they absolutely shocked me with, A, how much they already knew about this subject even before they'd come into the class, B, how they processed it, C, how they were planning to surf through the time. So in my personal life, I can tell you that we haven't pulled any punches. We haven't tried to hide anything. We've been very open and frank about it. And as a result, our children are of the mind that this is just how the world is. There are changes coming, and we feel they're very adjusted.
I've seen that, too. I'm developing a pretty close friendship with Tom Brown, the tracker, the survival instructor. Very cool guy. And boy, does he have a loyal following. But what I'm seeing is that the younger people are when they're exposed, the more they take to a new way of life. That doesn't mean we're all going to go live out in the trees or anything like that. But it means that you're absolutely right, Chris. The younger people are. The much more quickly they take to this, and I think teaching children about this is probably the best thing that could happen right now. We've got just about 3 minutes before the break. Now, what I'm going to do, Chris, when we come back, again, if you want to call in, ask Chris a question. The number is 1-888-874-4888, or you could email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com or read your question on the air. But when we come back, Chris, I have this thing on CollapseNet called the World News Desk, where we have like between, I don't know, 40 to 80 stories a day called from around the world using research methodology that we've developed over a great many years, and I analyze and comment on those. And because I hold you in such high esteem, I wish I would have done this with Nicole Foss too. When we come back, I'm going to pick some headlines from stories that I've culled throughout the week. Most of them are economic, but I want to get your comments on those, and we can sit there and kind of go through them, and maybe that way the audience can get a little bit more. Let me tell you briefly about CollapseNet. The important work that we do at CollapseNet is to make sense of all of what's going on everywhere for you by looking at all the crises of our time: economic collapse, sustainability, peak oil, geopolitical and military events, resource depletion, environmental collapse, and what is obviously unfolding as the end of the world as we know it. We deal with it, we research it, we analyze it, we illuminate it, and we hook people up in some pretty cool ways to help them and you. We have a big directory, and Chris is in that. We'll get to that in a minute. Perhaps, though, most importantly, we clearly see and acknowledge what's happening in the world around us, and we help you to see it so that you can prepare for it. People are being eaten alive now, whether by Mortgagegate, loss of pension funds, cutbacks. The pension funds things are really coming very soon. And very soon, enormous numbers of public employees are going to lose their jobs. We provide a free Lighthouse directory. Chris is in it now with more than 850 very uniquely useful goods, services, and training focused specifically on how to prepare for and survive the collapse and to make a transition to a relocalized and sustainable way of life. But what's proving to be of the utmost usefulness right now is our World News Desk and testimonials from our members, who are often very high-ranking decision-makers or policymakers, prove over and over that CollapseNet's World News Desk is the best single stop of daily news and commentary on the planet at any price. Thank you. And we're only about 27 cents a day or $100 a year. Any active member, however, of any one of the 77 transition initiatives around the U.S., that's from Transition U.S., anybody who's participating in one of those, you get a 50% discount with us at CollapseNet right off the bat. Just go to your monthly newsletter, copy and paste the coupon code when you sign up. We've awarded 20 barter memberships. We've got 23 now member blogs and regional blogs from around the country and the world. And, you know, CollapseNet's a place where we emphasize that the only real security lies in relationships. We're going to go to a break here at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, the rest of the show is me and Chris Martinson. Stand by. We're going to pluck this man's brain ruthlessly. We'll be back right after this.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Tune in to Citi's Grace Notes, where we'll be bringing you inspired voices from around the world, creative voices from various fields and backgrounds, new sounds, new music, and new ideas with your host, Citi, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
Progressives, this is Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front. I hope you've been enjoying the news I'm bringing you hot off the press, so to speak, like behind-the-scenes stories and insider scoop from Al Gore's recent climate conference. I know the Greenistas and love introducing the most informative and inspiring experts on the Green Front every week. So join me as we learn more about our environment and what we can do to turn it around.
The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, every Wednesday at 2 on the Progressive Radio Network.
Stephen Lindman hosts the Progressive Radio News Hour Saturdays and Sundays, as well as currently on Thursdays, as an antidote to government and corporate propaganda on the most cutting-edge world and national topics. Distinguished guests are regularly featured to provide commentary and analysis impossible to the dominant media, offering biased, irresponsible misinformation and what Project Censor calls junk food news. The Progressive Radio News Hour airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as well as Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Make it a regular habit and stay informed.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Michael C. Rupert with my guest tonight, Chris Martinson. And we're gonna plow through this next half an hour here. Chris, are you up for this? If I start throwing some stories with brief headlines out, and you want to give us what your take is on them?
Sure, this is one of my favorite games.
I love it. Okay, banks pull plug on consumer revolving debt, credit card debt, outstanding contracts from nearly $1 trillion to $800 billion, bankruptcies on rise, even with tougher bankruptcy laws. What's going on?
Well, a lot of the consumer credit has actually shrank for two reasons. The first is that some of that has just declined because people have actually defaulted on it.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that's happened there is that consumers are actually tapping into credit just a little bit less. So we have this whole story of recovery, which there's two components to the recovery. First is we need people out spending. So the propaganda machine has been just impressive. At every day in my local newspaper in the run-up to Christmas, above the fold, front page, was how are shoppers doing? You know, so they were really, really pumping that. But the other part of this story, which I'm sure Nicole Foss talked about extensively,
yes,
is that our economy runs on credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually very, very important that loans not only are going out the door, but that they're going out the door at exponentially increasing rates. That's how our system works. And so actually when we look at the decline in consumer credit, we have to split revolving from non-revolving, but when we do that, we find a story in there that's just not entirely supportive of the whole we're back on the track, consumers are good, we're all spending like
we're
drunken sailors again, and so we can be happy about that.
I think one of the things that Nicole said, too, was that, you know, it's not just us who work, us meaning little people, individuals, who, you know, work on credit, but it's also business does in a big way, and she sees a massive implosion of the credit bubble, which is how businesses, and I mean multinationals, how they finance ships going across the Pacific, that bubble is going to go. I certainly see inflation taking a major bite right now around the world. That's really hurting people. The Baltic Dry Index is plunging. And I'm kind of suspecting that liquidity is going to be one of the biggest issues now, and that's why I think everybody's holding on to cash. What do you think about that?
Well, there's two levels to the liquidity story. So let's be absolutely fair. The world central banks have flooded the world with liquidity.
Right.
Absolutely flooded it. And so when we talk about the implosion of credit, we got to be careful here. There's two types. Non-financial credit goes to all the non-financial institutions. In the U.S., it's about $35 trillion. But that includes governments, households, corporations, all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's financial debt. Okay, so this is what Wall Street's trading with each other, and this includes insurance companies and the like. So financial debt's really what imploded. Corporations
right.
are actually having a relatively easy time going out into the credit markets and raising debt at this point in time. They're holding record cash. On the other side of that, you have to ask what's on the other side of the balance sheet. They also have quite a lot of debt because they've gone out, and this is what, when you said, are people hoarding cash? Absolutely. People
yeah.
are holding on to their cash, but so are businesses.
Yeah.
And they've done it through the mechanism of going out, going into debt, and holding on to the cash.
I have recommended to all of my all of our members at CollapseNet that you get a strong cash position right now. I'm building up a stash of cash at the house because there's a great deal of uncertainty coming out. And about 6-7 months ago last summer, I suggested to my members that they might want to sell, and of course this all varies according to your individual position, up to half their gold to get the things right now that you need to have to survive. Not to hold on to all your gold, maybe not sell it all. Again, that depends upon how much you have. But I see some serious challenges coming up, and this is the point in time when you might want to take a little profit out of that gold and get whatever you need for water purification, first aid, anything else around the house. Chris, what do you think about that?
It's absolutely the right advice if people are sort of, if you will, starving themselves to hold on to gold. No question about it. I'd rather have useful things. Gold is useful to me in certain ways, but I'd much rather have solar panels on the roof, by which I mean solar thermals, solar hot water panels.
Right.
That's just one of the best investments you can make. As I look into the future, one of the things I clearly see is we have another energy crisis coming.
Yes.
It will make the last one look like chump change. It'll be more severe, more lasting, all of that.
This year. We have a caller, Rich from Boston. Rich, are you there? Rich, you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. Rich, meet Chris. Rich, you got a question, go ahead.
Yes, thanks very much. Question is straightforward. I recently pulled my money from being managed by a large financial institution, my 401k, because over the last 10 years the return has been so mediocre, and I've decided that I'm going to manage it myself the way I used to, and I was wondering what advice you'd give me at this point, given that gold is so high.
So, first of all, congratulations on taking control of your own finances.
Yes.
It's something I did in 2002 after getting very uncomfortable with sort of what I consider to be fairly lame excuses from my broker as to why my portfolio was imploding. And at this stage, though, we have to be really clear that there are very few investments out there. Almost everything is speculation. And here's what I mean. Speculating is just guessing on what's going to happen in the future. No matter how, you can do all the due diligence on a coin that you want, but when you flip it, it's heads or tails, right? So we're still speculating on the outcome of a coin flip. Where we all have to speculate, where we've been forced to speculate, is that we don't know what Bernanke's going to do in March. We don't know what the federal government is going to do in terms of additional stimulus spending. A lot of the current value of all kinds of things, including gold, but especially bonds, especially stocks, are all kind of perched on what happens on things that you and I can't really know about, nobody can know about. So when it comes to taking control of your own finances, I think it's very important to do that. There's a very high chance that, well, let me put it this way. For now, you finally have a manager whose interests are aligned with your own. And that's something that's not easy to come by in today's world. So in terms of specific advice as to where things should go, the first thing you need to do, though, is to get a really solid read on where things are going. Don't make any hasty decisions. Really, really look carefully at all your options. Right now, cash is a very legitimate position, so don't feel like you have to be in the market. You don't feel compelled that, cash, in this country, we talk about cash as if it's not a legitimate position. It is. And by cash, that could be, in a 401k. So obviously the cash is in a 401k account. I'm not meaning, physical cash in this case. So take your time. Get your feet under you. Start looking around at where everything is. Feel like it's okay to take your time. And don't make any hasty moves. There are a number of sites out there, my own included, but many others as well, where people, this is their number one question. And they talk about it. They talk about it truthfully. They talk about it honestly. I think the first thing you need to invest in is your education around where the scams really are, what's a legitimate investment. And some exist out there, by the way. But they're harder to come by, and where you might be exposing yourself unnecessarily to speculation, which is too much risk, in my opinion, in this current environment.
We have an email now from Bill Stacey to the Lifeboat Hour. Good question. I was just wondering what you think about coal-to-liquid technology. Oh, boy, don't start me. And if it will be economically feasible. I believe the U.S. has a plan to start producing coal-to-liquids on a large scale. They even have guys like Jesse Ventura on True TV saying global warming is a hoax. Bill Stacey. Chris, you want that one first? Because you're probably going to not be able to shut me up if I start.
Well, there's a lot packed into that question, but just on the issue of cold liquids, you know, this is something I talk about extensively in the book that I just wrote. Here's the thing. Cold liquids requires a couple of things to be true. First, it requires you to have a suitable grade of coal that you can put into that system. And if we're asking the question, if the reason we're looking at cold liquids, if we're asking the question, can CTL technology fill the gap that we expect is going to be left by retreating oil, assuming you believe, like I do, that peak oil is right about now, the answer is no. There's just no possible way in terms of the cost, in terms of the flow rates, all of that, where we can expect that technology to seamlessly step into the gap and allow us to continue to lead the lifestyles that we had become accustomed to leading.
And
CTL technology fill some of the gap? Can it be part of a solution? Yes. Will that solution ever allow us to just get back to how things were 5 years ago? The answer is no.
Yeah. Fischer-Tropsch technology was used by the Germans in World War II because the German war machine had very little oil. And it's a net energy loser. It takes more energy to make than you get back from burning it. That's number one. Number two, and I'm going to be off on this, Chris, you may know, I think it takes something like 40 gallons of fresh water to make a gallon of usable oil using Fischer-Tropsch. So that's, you know, it's not going to work ever, period.
There's really only, I think there's two or maybe three synfuel plants out there running. One's in South Africa. They're doing it because, you know, they've got coal but no liquid fuels. Mm-hmm. And they had a number of other reasons they were running that. They're very expensive, about $5 billion to toss up one of those plants with about 100,000 barrels per day, somewhere in that neighborhood. When we really look at it, 100,000 barrels per day is just a drop in the bucket. So it would be trillions of dollars if we wanted to go down that path. There are other far easier paths to go down, but I'm just not a huge fan of saying that's where we're going to, that's the silver bullet. Everything's okay.
I wrote a book called Confronting Collapse, which has a chapter on how you can evaluate any alternative energy source all by yourself, whatever you hear about that's out there. It's a very short read. It's the companion book for the documentary Collapse that's done pretty well. And I strongly suggest that you get that, Confronting Collapse. That way you won't have to come running back every time you hear of another alternative that somebody's trying to tell you works. We have another caller, Chip from Tampa. Are you there?
Yeah, hi, guys. An hour isn't going to be nearly enough for the two of you together, so I hope this is just part one of what turns out to be a three or four part ongoing discussion.
I think we can get Chris back.
I've got two questions for you. One will be a very short answer. Have either of you been in touch with Ted Turner? I have a feeling he would fully agree with both of your views and be very supportive of your websites and what you're doing.
No,
I haven't.
And he's a guy who is able to back very seriously.
I know that on a daily basis, a lot of very large names come to my website, and they probably go to Chris's as well. They probably go to Automatic Earth. They probably go to Transition US. They're all watching. A few of them have had the nerve yet to step out in front in public and say anything. Richard Branson was pretty good after he saw the movie. He's taken a strong position on peak oil. But no, I'm not going to go chasing after Ted Turner. He can find us if he wants to.
Sure. Okay. I have this wacky belief that the country and the world would be a heck of a lot better, certainly environmentally, but also financially, if we would trade in our cars for electric bikes. And I just wonder if either of you had any thoughts as to how to make that happen before we have to do it because we're too poor to drive cars.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of things that we could be doing, and if electric bikes, we'll use that as the metaphor for it, and if not the actual solution. There's a lot of things we could be doing to help us navigate and mitigate the impacts of going down the slope of peak oil. So for people who aren't aware, peak oil represents a lot more than just saying, oh my gosh, market forces will correct this, and gas will be a little bit more expensive, but we'll muddle through. There's something here that's really much more profound than that, which is that the way our economy is designed, which is a function of how the money system itself is put together, mm-hmm. something I talk about in the Crash Course pretty extensively, because these are two really important dots to connect. our economy is a complex system. And like any complex system, like you, Chip, you're a complex system. Any complex system requires energy to maintain its order and its complexity. And when you put less energy into one of these complex systems, it starts to break down. Whether we put less food into you and, you know, you become ill and all of that, or we take the economy, the thing that's not really well appreciated yet out there in the world is that whatever solutions we're navigating towards, if they really require us to very suddenly start trying to get by on a lot less energy than the entire system has been tuned for, the system is just not going to behave that well.
Springs are going to start flying out.
What's that?
Springs are going to start flying out. Smoke is going to happen. You're going to hear grinding noises. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's good reasons for it. So like right now, we said, listen, we don't want to use oil to transport stuff anymore. The problem is that all the container ships have been built to run on oil, and all the diesel locomotives have been built to run on oil, and all of our cars have already been built. All of that's the capital of our society that's already been invested in those technologies. So even if today we snapped our fingers and said, we have this new technology, it's electric and we can all use it, it will take decades for all of that existing capital to get run down and to disappear in a graceful way. Otherwise, we have to call it a sunk cost, push the button, blow it up, and it's enormously disruptive, and it means an enormous hit to our standards of living. All kinds of follow-on effects happen from that. So energy transitions are so much more difficult for cultures than technology transitions where we go from, you know, an iPhone 3G to an iPhone 4 or something like that. Those are simple. Energy transitions have this enormous baked-in capital expenditure, sunk cost inertia.
Professor,
it just sits there, very hard to get around.
Professor David Goodstein of Caltech, who was the vice chancellor at Caltech, wrote a great book. It came out about, I think, 2003, called The End of the Age of Oil. And in that book, he said very clearly, it takes 30 years to change an energy infrastructure. And the Hirsch Report, the seminal Hirsch Report from 2005, was very clear, laying out scenarios if we started making changes 20 years, 10 years, and waited until it was too late, which is clearly what we have done. And the only outcome of that is collapse or catastrophe. I've got another headline I want to do here real quick. From the Christian Science Monitor this week, European nations begin seizing private pensions. And before I ask your opinion, Chris, we've been tracking on the World News Desk at CollapseNet how there is a measure moving in the Republican House under John Boehner now that will allow states to file for bankruptcy. And I think it's very clear, and we've been documenting this trend as it's been evolving, that we will see bankruptcies of New York, Michigan, Illinois, California, New Jersey this year, and you will see the instant disappearance of state pension funds and all wage contracts. How important is this trend, Chris, and how soon do you see it really starting to bite?
Well, you know, there's quite a number of the states you've mentioned, and there's certain municipalities we could sort of pile on. They're already insolvent. Mm-hmm. Insolvent meaning there's liabilities are vastly larger than their assets under any pro forma revenue stream you could possibly conjure up. So insolvency is the first step before bankruptcy. As you know, states aren't really allowed, usually by constitution, to go into bankruptcy. It's not an option. So it's interesting that the federal government's going to try and start to mediate in that particular piece. And I'm not sure if a congressional act will pass the test. I guarantee you if that goes, we're going to see that in the Supreme Court, because I'm sure there's some legalities they're going to have to figure out around that.
And
but
you'll
here's
see
the
a
bottom
lot of,
line. You know,
yeah, go ahead.
We're on a completely unsustainable fiscal course here, and that's at the state level. It's also at the federal government level. And the definition of something that's unsustainable is it'll someday stop. And the question of when things are going to stop used to be pretty clear to me a number of years ago, and now it's less clear because they change the rules constantly now. You know, where we used to think, well, this will have to end then because of, and you could see the rules and understand it, and there was some rules we were playing by, those have all been shifted.
Yes.
You know, if anybody cares to look at the 21,000 separate sort of rescue events that the Fed undertook during the depths of the crisis, and a lot of that stuff, I can't find that in the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, some of the stuff they did. They just bent the rules, and it was important, and you know they felt they had to, and they justified it, rationalized it. But
you know, I was talking to Cynthia McKinney today about that, and you know, Ron Paul's taken over the House Subcommittee on Monetary Oversight. I'm sure I named the subcommittee wrong, but it's pretty clear that Ron Paul wants to go after the Fed. And Cynthia McKinney, who is known for being on the left, and she, both she and Ron Paul were in my video Truth and Lies of 9/11, and she's cheering for Ron Paul. She's saying, I hope he just gets in there and kicks you know what. So, you know, and I think we all would like that because the rules are now made of sand, and the rule of law, I think, is evaporating. Mortgagegate is a classic example of that. Got a few more questions, so I'm going to try to move, Chris, so that we can get to everybody. This is from Lisa Rogers. Mike, I just wanted to say a quick thank you for the great work that you guys are doing at CollapseNet. It's my best source of information every day, and I wait anxiously to get my fix. We have no credit cards and are close to having everything paid off, except for our land payment, which is not financed through a bank. My big concern is that our biggest source of debt that we will be left with is our student loans, amen. Unless we win the lottery, I don't see us being able to get those things paid off before things get really bad. My question is, how might this impact us as things get worse? I've heard you talk about our debtors' prisons, et cetera, and wondered what might be some possibilities for all of us who have an outstanding educational loans. Thanks, and keep up the good work. That's from Lisa. Go ahead, Chris.
Lisa, the student loan situation is actually one of the most challenging because it is the only loan, literally the only loan type you can have in this country that's not dischargeable.
In bankruptcy.
Everything else is dischargeable through Chapter 7, 11, 13. You know, there's some way out, but not student loans. And so student loans are going to be there. They're going to be there for a long time. I would be surprised if a lot of people aren't looking at student loans right now, kind of like mortgage loans in California where or other places, maybe Las Vegas, where people have sort of gotten out of the vibe and said, if enough of us don't pay these off, I wonder what happens next. And for a lot of people, the answer is nothing. So student loans is a really tricky one. I really counsel people to think long and hard before taking them on. If you've already got them, that's another circumstance. But, you know, for my own children, I'm saying, listen, we're going to really have to do a cost-benefit analysis on college education at this point because it may not be worth it in the future we see. So it's a hard question. I really understand the nature of that. And it's just, to me, it's a travesty that student loans are non-dischargeable in any fashion.
And the advice that I'm giving out now, too, is whatever you do, do not take out a student loan in fine arts. Do not take out one in art design, media criticism, or anything like that. The only thing that I would recommend anybody taking out a student loan for now is extremely practical and useful skill training, and then only if you had no other option, because you have to look ahead for what the jobs are that are going to be in demand as this gets worse. I have a question now from Himanshu Tiwari. I hope I pronounced that right. Himanshu Tiwari. I'm a member of CollapseNet. My wife and I live in Blacksburg, Virginia. My sincere gratitude to both of you for your superlative work. I also visit Chris's site on a website regularly. I have seen all the Crash Course videos. I just finished reading Crossing the Rubicon, and I'm on page 54 of Confronting Collapse. I like this guy. My question to Chris is, he writes, I am aware that you think that inflation has the upper hand over deflation. When I listen to deflationists such as Nicole Foss of Automatic Earth, they make a very compelling case as well. What's your rationale to conclude that inflation has the upper hand? Now, before Chris starts, I'm jumping in and I'm saying, you got to look at this patient that's having multiple system failure all at the same time. And the one thing, and we'll find out if Chris agrees with me, that I'm very emphatic on is do not get paralyzed arguing about something that what Chris said versus what Nicole said versus what I said or Peter Schiff. But Chris, go ahead and take that one on. That's going to be very important.
It's a very important question. And the first thing is, it's important not to fall into the trap of thinking, is it deflation or inflation?
Right.
The answer can easily be yes, right? So if the answer today happens to be yes, deflation in house prices and house assets, things like that. But where else are we seeing maybe a slight hint of deflation? Bond prices, but only very recently on a long-term channel. Bond prices are quite high. Stocks up. Look at commodities. There are many commodities that are up 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, even 100% year over year. And so ultimately, when inflation or deflation. What do we care about? We care about our purchasing power next year, in the future.
Yes.
Right? That's what we really care about. And so, yes, I understand all of the theories that how we define inflation, deflation is important. Is it money supply? Is it credit? All of that stuff. Ultimately, we're in very uncertain territory. We've already determined that there are no rules. Deflation is what should be happening, and I'm capitalizing that word as I speak it, but it's not yet. And the reason it's not is because the Fed has broken the rules, bent the rules, changed the rules. And so ultimately, we're left in this uncomfortable position. I feel like a kid playing dodgeball, and I'm like the last one on my team, right? You know, you got to be ready to move any direction. And that's where we're at. But I do lean pretty heavily towards inflation because I look at how much money's been dumped out there. Ultimately, inflation is too much money chasing too few goods and services. I think we're going to have the most amount of money ever seen printed on the face of the planet at the same time peak oil becomes a recognized reality. That is a classic case of too much paper money and too few goods and services,
okay,
which
we
will be arbitrated by peak oil.
We're down to our last minute, Chris Martinson. God, there's so much more that I wanted to talk to you about. First of all, will you come back on the show again for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Oh, thank you. Well, you're welcome anytime. I want to get Nicole Foss back. Chris, again, how can people find you?
They can go to my website. It's chrismartinson.com. That's spelled chrismartenson.com. Or they could just search the Crash Course. Pops right up at the top of the Google search. And we have a thriving community there, and as you do, and we talk about a lot of things, and it's great place to hang out and learn about what's going on.
Have you seen our World News Desk, Chris? At Collapse Net, you will have a free membership, by the way. I want you to check it out because there's something so great when you get people like this talking about news, kind of like the old McLaughlin report. You really get the flesh, put some meat on the bones of what's happening. I am so grateful that you were our guest tonight, Chris Martinson, and I think we got to most of the questions that everybody sent in. Let's all of us keep our powder dry and pay special attention to the fact that once we understand what's going on, just as Chris said, you don't need a plan. What you need are options right now. And we both have remarkably similar ideas about how you go about that. No competition here. Everybody just get ready because it's going to get real spicy. Chris Martinson, thank you so much. For everybody else out there, 2 weeks from tonight, Congresswoman Cynthia McKitty, is she going to run again? Well, we will find out then 2 weeks from tonight. Next week, Bob Waldrop from Running on Empty. This is Mike Rupert from the Lifeboat Hour. Thanks so much for a great evening. Good night.